Welcome, everybody, to Health, Wealth, and Divine, also known as Jawanza for Life. Man, oh, man, oh, man, I got a show that's right on time for you today. It is truly an honor, as always, to have the opportunity to speak with people who are saving lives, who are changing lives, and enhancing the quality of our lives, people that have devoted themselves to service. People have devoted themselves to helping us to get better. And it is with that in mind that once a month we have as our special guest Dr. Ted Watkins. And for those of you who are tuning in for the very first time and you've never heard of Dr. Watkins, I guarantee you that you will realize what a blessing that you have in the opportunity to actually sit and listen to somebody who has, again, dedicated their life to helping us get well. If we find ourselves unfortunate enough to be in a situation where we're not well, it's comforting to know that there are people out there that know what they're talking about, have been doing it for a while, and bring us the truth about medicine, the truth about health, and, again, have dedicated their lives to helping us to get better. Dr. Ted Watkins, in case you've never tuned into the show before and you don't know who he is a medical doctor. Dr. Ted Watkins, MD, graduated from the Howard University College of Medicine back in 1977, and he works in Washington, D.C., and specializes in general practice and family medicine. And again, I want to emphasize the fact that he is a medical doctor. Oftentimes when you're talking about and talking with people on the holistic health path, many people don't, you'll find, it's rare that you'll find somebody that knows the body like Dr. Watkins. I mean, having gone to and graduated from, again, the Howard University College of Medicine, you know, and actually has a history starting out in surgery, again, I emphasize the point that he knows the body. A lot of times people that claim to know the body and have not really studied the intricacies of the body like somebody who holds an MD would know, okay? But even with that, having that medical degree, he is a holistic health doctor now. And with that background, he brings to the discussion on health a perspective that many people in the holistic health field just don't have. And so it is with my humble pleasure, I welcome to you, Dr. Ted Watkins. Doctor, welcome back to Jawanza. It's great to have you as always.
It's always my pleasure to be here.
You know, Dr. Watkins, as I mentioned, you know, there are a lot of people in the holistic health field now. It's getting flooded. It's getting kind of crowded, you know. But when you talk to people, like, for example, yourself, somebody that has your MD, I mean, again, you have a perspective on the body that a lot of people don't have. A lot of people are calling themselves healers today. You know, they may have taken a course or, you know, gone through a little training, but just with all of the studies that you had to undertake just to learn about the body and how it works, you have a perspective that a lot of people don't have, being a medical doctor and a holistic health doctor. Can you talk about just how that background in health, being a medical doctor, helped you even when it came to making the transition from, or shall I say, adding to your practice, the holistic health aspect and just the training that you had as a doctor, how that helped you in giving you a perspective on the body?
Well, I think it gives, you know, it gives a very good perspective because we you know, fortunately or unfortunately, the rigors of medical school is quite significant, and so we have to push real hard. But we've learned that the various aspects of medicine, you know, the whole body, if you please, the psychological. We had to take psychiatry at least 3 years, if not 4 years, of medicine. You know, the only course we had to take every year. basically. But it gives you a better sense of what we're doing. And of course, we also study drugs, and I did surgery, 5 years of surgery, and so that also gave me another perspective. And you know, I'm excited to be a doctor. I'm excited for the opportunity to. I really don't like the word practice medicine, but but to be a physician who works with patients to help them change their lifestyles and get well, you know, I think that's very, very significant. And I've been doing it now for a few years. You know, time sort of flies by, you know, when you're having fun, I guess. But, you know, it's well over 35 years.
Wow.
it's a long time.
I remember 1970s. That was a very good year.
You know, and so we think that when I look at people who now you know are trying to make lifestyle changes, I get very, very excited because I realize that I can help them get well. You know, I couldn't do that in other areas of medicine. I never thought about it that way because I thought that I was a doctor that helped people to get well, but I really didn't help them to get well. I helped to control their symptoms. And now in holistic medicine, I can help them to get well.
You know, doctor, it must be, well, I'm not going to say it must be, I'll just ask, how does it feel when people come to you at various stages of illness, and in some cases, I mean, even as a surgeon, coming to you and their life is hanging in the balance. I mean, you know, their life is literally in your hand, you know. If they follow your instructions, I mean, it takes faith on their part to follow your instructions, to know that if, you know, Dr. Watkins says do this, I can get better. And then for you to actually see the transformation, to see the change, to see them gradually get better. And it just must be an awesome, awesome, a feeling of awesome responsibility, knowing that, again, their life is in your hands. It's not like if somebody takes their car to an auto mechanic and if he doesn't fix it right, the worst that can happen is, you know, they just take the car somewhere else, you know. But in your case, you know, they come to you, again, with their life in your hands. Can you talk about that feeling of that responsibility? And, you know, you really have to be dedicated to seeing your patients get better.
Just today. It's amazing. I was talking to a father of a young lady that I'm treating that has, you know, a potentially terminal disease. And I told the father, I said, you know, I don't like being in this position. I really don't. You know, I'd much rather treat a broken toenail, you know, than to have to deal with somebody who, based on the information that I give them, can live or die, you know.
Yeah, that's got to be extremely. I don't know what the word is. I mean, heavy, for lack of a better term,
it is really heavy. Because I definitely don't like being in that position. But I also recognize that I was called to that position. You know, I believe that God chose me to do what I do. You know, for instance, I had stopped treating cancer patients, you know, because I, you know, one of my colleagues said, look, doc, you know, they're taking people's license away, you know. And they hit me. I said, wait a minute, the patient don't even care. They're not working to get well. Why should I, you know, risk my future for people who don't want to get well? But then, and I stopped treating cancer patients, but then the Lord spoke to me and said, look, I have chosen you, and I'll take care of you. And so with that assurance, I went on back to treating cancer. But, and what happened was I noticed that people came terminal, people that other doctors had said, there's nothing we can do, go home and die. And I learned that by changing lifestyle, even in these late stages, that some of these people could be salvaged and turned around.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, and you've seen it happen. I mean, so when we're talking to you, we're not talking to somebody.
Numerous times.
You know, you're not going on hearsay. You know, you've actually seen it, witnessed it, and played a part, a big part in it. So that's why, you know, just having you and your firsthand knowledge on the show is very, very significant. Well, tonight we're going to be talking about avoiding heat stroke. We got a heat wave that's out of this world. I mean, I know up in the D.C. area tomorrow, you mentioned it's going to be like 100 degrees. And a lot of people, if they don't know what to do to prevent it, unfortunately may suffer from it. And that's why this show is very, very important, because we're trying to get the word out that heat stroke can be avoided. And if you do what you be instructed to do today, you don't have to worry about getting a heat stroke. There are ways to prevent it. But, Doc, before we actually get into the heat aspect of heat stroke, let's ask, if I may ask, what is a stroke? And then from there we can go into actually the specific what is a heat stroke. When a person has a stroke, what actually has happened to the body?
You actually have a portion of the body has been cut off from its source of a blood supply. And in the brain, you can have a stroke in that the either a blood vessel bursts and destroys certain blood cells, or a clot goes and lodges in a vessel and blocks the flow of blood to a particular area. And it's a sudden situation, and it leaves cells to die because of lack of nutrients. And it's a very common occurrence in our population.
So when the person has a heat stroke, is it simply, I mean, can it simple as just being dehydrated, just not having drank enough water? I mean, is that the short answer? You know, if a person drinks more water and they drink, you know, their whatever the ounces they're supposed to drink, half their body weight in ounces per day, is that the short answer, drink more water?
Well, that's not in a sense, you know, water is a very, very important component of avoiding a heat stroke and even treatment for a heat stroke. But what happens in a heat stroke is that the core of the body becomes overheated, overwhelmed. And so it's the most serious of the heat injuries, and it's really considered to be a medical emergency. You know, and sometimes we call it a sunstroke, but these people literally collapse. That's where the stroke part of it comes from. They collapse because their bodies have been overcome by this heat injury.
Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about a heat stroke, are there any symptoms that a person can, you know, be aware of that lets them know that, you know, hey, I'm headed in that direction? You know, because sometimes with certain illnesses, there are symptoms that you can look at and say, you know, this symptom is leading me to believe that, you know, something might be oncoming. How about with a heat stroke, or is it just that sudden that you just don't know it until you got it?
Well, once again, we said that you know, the hallmark symptom is when that body core, or I guess you can call it a sign, when the core of the body gets above 105 degrees Fahrenheit. And that person may at that point faint, all right? And that may be the first sign of a heat stroke. But you can have other symptoms. You can have a throbbing headache. You can be dizzy or lightheaded. Sometimes the individual will not sweat in spite of the fact that there's a lot of heat. So you have this dry, hot, red skin. You know, the muscles can be weak, and you can have cramps. There can be nausea, vomiting. The heart rate can speed up. And that heart rate can either be strong, like a bounding pulse, or it can be very weak. You know, your breathing can be rapid, yet shallow, you know. And then sometimes the first sign is just the person is a little confused, just disoriented. They may be staggering. Some people will have a seizure, you know, and some people will just become unconscious. So these are some of the symptoms that can be present in a person who has who's about to have a heat stroke.
You know, I know that there are a lot of people out there that are listening, and I'm sure that this show is going to reach a lot of people. So I think we need to dispel something right now, and that is this. When it gets hot in the summer, a lot of times the first thing that people reach for is a soda, okay? Or if they're playing basketball or something, if they don't have water, they might have a six-pack, you know, on the side in a cooler, you know. And after running up and down the court for a couple of hours, they might run over and pop a beer. Just anything cold they think will, you know, quench their thirst. Could you talk about that, Doc? You know, just how important it is that the body needs water, okay? When it's hot and you're sweating and you want to quench that thirst, the best thing you can drink is water. Could you talk about the need for us to not reach for the other stuff when the body's actually craving water?
Well, I mean, you're absolutely correct. In fact, one of the risk factors for having a stroke, a heat stroke, is the use of alcohol, and probably we could put sugar-laden beverages in that same, because you feel thirsty. And you think that is satisfying your thirst, but in reality, it is, you know, helping to dehydrate you. You know, it's helping to dehydrate you. And so you want to reach for some water, some fruit or vegetable juice. You know, and get properly hydrated. You also want to be careful not to be depleted of salt, you know, because salt depletion is a big thing. So, you know, a lot of people recommend drinking those sport drinks. You know, I'm not mm-hmm. necessarily a big fan of those, but at least they are balanced. Electrolyte. They're electrolyte rich, and so that can be a positive. But yeah, water is the best thing that you can drink in a situation like that.
Well,
along
Dr.
with some salt.
There, and okay, so how much? Because people, what's the balance with the salt? Because you know, you might have some people that are always saying, "Hey, you're putting too much salt on your food." You know, so how then is a person to know how much? Because people always say if you take too much salt, supposedly it raises your blood pressure, right? So, you know, what's the balance with that? I mean, it, you know, because some people, and that's subjective, I'm sure, because some people, what's too much? I mean, what's too much? If you tell somebody don't put too much salt on your food, that's not a, too much is not something, you can't measure that, you know, that's not measurable. It might look like too much. It might look like you're putting a little on, or let's say if you've been used to putting on, you know, a whole lot of salt, and then you just cut back a little bit. You think you're cutting back, but you're still putting on too much salt. So how much would you say is something measurable that people shouldn't go over a particular marker, and how do you measure the salt intake?
Well, first of all, it's very interesting. I presented a paper last week on water, and we may at some point want to talk about that. Several articles I read suggested that the problem that we have is not too much salt. And that salt raising the blood pressure, that in fact studies don't show that. So I won't say too much about it today. I'll go ahead and research it for myself. But, you know, we throw it out as if it's a fact. But according to at least one author, and I think it was several authors, that's not substantiated. One said that they show two studies that were done showed that taking extra salt can actually be beneficial. But as far as the heat stroke is concerned, yeah, I know. I remember when I was in college, I worked in the steel mill, and it was a good job because it paid well. One of the first things that they told me and those that was hired is that you have to make sure you drink plenty of water, and we have these salt bins all around the place. Get plenty of salt. If you sweat a lot, you definitely need to take in a lot of salt, all right? Because I don't know if you've ever sweated a lot and then let your skin dry and you see this white film on your skin. The salt actually comes through the pores and you're losing salt. And so you have to take more than you would normally take, you know, when it's real hot, because you're going to be losing some medicinal salt. So, you know, I can't give you the milligrams, but
right,
you want to take a little extra salt when it's real hot to replace the salt that you're going to lose sweating and through your urine, etc.
Well, when it comes to food and water, since water is such a vital component in this discussion as it relates to avoiding heat stroke, are there foods or substances, drinks, in addition to the alcohol that deplete the water in the body, like, say, coffee or something? Does coffee have a negative effect
on... Coffee is especially bad because coffee dehydrates you.
Okay.
It pulls the fluid out of the cell. And so it's one of the worst things that you can drink, because your colas have caffeine in it. They're in the same boat. They just don't have as much caffeine as coffee does. But the dehydrating effect, plus with the sugar, which also helps to dehydrate, you're putting yourself in a bad, bad position by drinking coffee.
Now, what if it's decaffeinated? Would that matter?
Well, decaffeinated is better, but even decaffeinated coffee and even green tea has some caffeine in it. It's not as much, and so you're not as in much danger, but, you know, I try to not put myself in that position at all.
So, Doc, when it comes
to drink the water. Just drink the water.
When it comes to a heat stroke, are the after effects of the heat stroke the same as somebody that just had, and I don't know what term to call it other than a regular stroke? I mean, you know, normally, I won't even say normally, but many times when a person has had a stroke, you know, they might not have the use of, you know, something, one side of their body, or, you know, their mouth might be twisted, or something like that. When it comes to a heat stroke, are the after effects of the heat stroke the same as that, or
no,
is it just, you know?
Generally, a heat stroke is more generalized than you know, a regular thrombolic stroke or a bleed, a ruptured vessel that causes a stroke. So that tends to affect a specific area, where the heat stroke is affecting a more general part of the brain. And so, if you lose consciousness, if there's a cutoff of blood supply to the brain for a significant period of time, then, you know, the longer, the more severe the stroke, the more severe would be the after effect. But it would be more general, and it could definitely be in terms of memory, you know, just overall neurologic function.
So if somebody, let's say, is, we'll just say, out there running the full court, you know, playing basketball, and it's, you know, 100 degrees, and, you know, they're drinking beer to cool off, and all of a sudden, as they're going for a layup, you know, they just fall out, okay, on the basketball court. What if, you know, what should be the first thing that people around them do after they call the ambulance? Ambulance, I said ambulance. After they call the ambulance. 911, and while they're waiting for the ambulance to get there, to give them water, right? I mean, is there anything that they should not do? You know,
well,
don't
the
give them no more
should,
beer or whatever you do, but yeah. Or soda, but definitely give them water. Anything else?
Yeah, they need to try to cool them off. You know, they can put wet cold towels on their skin. They can fan them. They can put ice packs in the arm, in the groin, on the neck, the back. And you do this because these areas are very rich in blood supply, and they're close to the skin, and they'll reduce the body temperature, you know, fast. If they're in a position where you can put them in a tub or shower of water, you know, in an ice bath, you do that, you know. But you try to do something to cool the person off, because the issue is heat. The issue is heat, and so you want to cool them off, you know. And if you notice that the ambulance is delayed, you may even call the emergency room and get some more get some more instructions for what to do.
Everybody, my special guest is Dr. Ted Watkins, MD. We're talking about avoiding heat stroke. It's hot out there. And, you know, even when it gets hot, I mean, in the wintertime, when it gets cold, you can always put on more clothes. You can always put on more layers. But in the summer, when it's hot, I mean, you just can't walk around naked, okay? So you can't take off your skin, you know? So it's going to be very important to dress for the weather, okay? And by all means, as Dr. Watkins would say, drink lots of water. You got to drink water. I mean, some people say, Doc, they don't like water. You know, it's tasteless. They say, you know, hey, I don't like water. What would you say to those people?
Drink it anyway.
you know, it really doesn't matter. Either, right?
You know, I'll be honest, I'm not a big fan of water, but I ask God to help me to drink it anywhere. You know, just drink it. You know, because we need to take that water in. But you mentioned the issue of clothes. You know, you do need to dress lightly, to not wear heavy clothes that's going to make you sweat even more. So lightweight clothes is important. And even the colors of the clothes can make a difference. And I'm not an authority on that, but light colors tend to be better than dark colors in terms of the heat stroke. But you also got to consider that there are certain populations that are at higher risk for heat stroke than others, all right? Certain populations. The very young and the very old are at higher risk for heat stroke. And for actually different reasons. The very young is because they're mainly water. They're mainly water. And so they can lose a significant amount of their body weight because of the water, the sweating and so forth. But then the old, very old, because their water has decreased, you know. They say the fetus is close to 100% water. When a child is born, they're 80 to 90% water. Then the adult, male or female, is between 50 and 60% water. But then the senior adult is 50% or less water. And those people who are overweight, they already have reduced. You know, you can go from 60 to down to even 45% water because of obesity. And so all these things put people at greater risk for heat strokes because they're starting at a deficient level. They're starting at a deficient level. And so we need to be very, very – if a person is nausea and vomiting and having diarrhea, because they're losing so much water and electrolytes, they're at a much higher risk of having a heat stroke even faster. And so we have to look at people sort of know their history. If they're taking certain medicines that acts as diuretics and help to deplete the body of water, that can be another factor. And so we look at all these factors that that are present and that can contribute to having a heat stroke.
You know, you mentioned the elderly, and I'd like to stay there for a second because there may be people out here that are caring for older people. You know, it might be your parents, your grandparents, or, you know, somebody that's elderly. And might not really understand the significance of drinking water. I think that's a very, very big piece because I probably am correct when I say that the elderly probably don't drink the required amount of water. And is that required amount half your body weight in ounces. Is that correct, doctor? Is that
yes, half, at least half your body weight in ounces. You know, but it's funny. You know, I just had a birthday last week, and turned 72. Now, according to when I was a little boy, I'm elderly. But I don't feel elderly. All right. And the point that I'm making is that we can grow old gracefully if we take good care of ourselves, if we eat the right things, we drink the right things, we get the exercise, we think the right thoughts, then you don't put yourself in a position where you're considered to be elderly because somebody else didn't do what they were supposed to do, you know. So we need to make sure that we take care of ourselves so that as we get older, our percent of body water does not decrease because we're constantly supplying the water to the body and our cells are vibrant and are doing their job.
You know, Doc, you mentioned that you're not really a fan of water. I guess the taste of it, but you drink it anyway. And I'm like that, you know. I mean, water doesn't really turn me on like that, you know. But I, like you, know that I need it. I know that once I drink it, it's out of the way. So I try to get my ounces in, and, you know, once I'm done, I'm done, you know. And then I feel good about the fact that I drank it because I know I did something that's going to benefit me, and as opposed to not drinking it and saying, well, I just don't like it, I'm not going to drink it. But, I mean, and I think that for a lot of people, we have to make mature decisions, you know, to say I don't like water and therefore I'm not going to drink it because I don't like it, even after you've heard the benefits of drinking water and the side effects of not drinking water. That's an immature decision to say I'm not going to drink water because it doesn't taste good or I don't like it, even
well,
if you know that your body needs it.
You're generous. I think it's stupid. And we do stupid things, you know. And see, if you really want to be healthy, then you must do what's necessary to become healthy. You know, I looked in the trash can in my bathroom, and I said, boy, look at all those bottles, all those containers, which at one point had water in them, you know. Mm-hmm. But I've been trying to do, you know, so we have to do what's necessary. We can't let our likes and our dislikes really get the best of us.
Well, Doc, since we're talking about water, this is a vital piece in the heat stroke prevention conversation. What type of water would you recommend? There are a lot of types of water out there. You got spring water, you got, you know.
Well, let me just tell you what I've been recommending to my patients. I've been recommending that they take a gallon of distilled water, and they put 1 teaspoon of sea salt in that water, and that's going to make it alkaline. It's going to make it rich in minerals, and they drink at least half of their body weight in ounces per day. You know, and so that's what I've been recommending to my patients to do, and I stress at least half, because especially now, you want to drink more. But at the same time, you don't want to put yourself in a position where they need and they didn't get, and you're on the hook for having not advised them to drink what they need.
You know, Doc, you mentioned sea salt, and we had been talking about salt, so this is a good time to, you know, bring that up. Why sea salt as opposed to table salt?
Why sea salt?
As opposed to table salt.
Because sea salt is rich in minerals. Some sea salts have up to 80 different nutrients in the salt. You know, 80 different nutrients. as opposed to the table salt, which is sodium chloride, you know. Mm-hmm. And so when you have all of these different minerals, then the salt is in the form that the body wants to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's much more effective than you know, just regular commercial, chemically produced table salt.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned sea salt, and I mean not sea salt, but distilled water. Can you talk about spring? I mean, is there a particular reason why you suggested distilled over spring?
When if you go out, we've been having a lot of rain around here. If you go out and collect that rain is going to be distilled water. If you go and pull off an apple on a tree or a carrot, that water is going to be distilled. I just think that God seemed to know what he's doing, and I don't need to try to improve on him. You know, some people say, well, if you drink distilled water, you won't get the minerals. Well, you're not drinking the water for the minerals. You're drinking the water for the water. And if you get the sea salt and some other minerals, so that's how I would answer that question. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, let me just give everybody a chance to chime in if they want to. If you're listening by phone, all you have to do is press 1 if you'd like to join the conversation. Special guest is Dr. Watkins, MD. We're talking about avoiding heat stroke. You definitely want to do that, and drinking water is a large component in that. Dressing cool is a large component in that. If you have a question, all you have to do is press 1 on your telephone. It will let me know that you'd like to speak, and I can bring you on board, and we can continue the conversation. You know, Doc, what about vitamin water? I know you mentioned, certain of the sports drinks that you're not a fan of. But what about vitamin water, the water that supposedly they put a bunch of vitamins in it and it's supposed to be really healthy? Your thoughts on that?
Well, the best vitamin water is juice, from my perspective. These commercial things, I don't put any stock in them. You know, number one, they sort of can lie on the labels, and so you don't really know what you have in the water. And so I would clearly recommend that when you drink water, you drink water. And this other water is going to be more expensive, and yet it's probably not going to be nearly as effective. So, without knowing the specific brand of water, the idea does not sit well with me, and those waters would most likely have too much sugar, and that is definitely a no-no.
You know, Doc, what I'm about to say, I've only heard this one time, and I've done shows on water before, and but I've never heard this except for on only one occasion, and that was the drinking of too much water. I was reading an article in the paper several years back, and there was a marathon runner who died at the race. I mean, he just ran himself to death at the race. He died, fell out, and they said that it wasn't because he was dehydrated. I mean, he had his water with him. I mean, he was running, had his water, and just actually drank too much water, they said, and died. I mean, have you ever heard of someone dying from drinking too much water?
I've not heard of someone dying, but there is a disease where you can drink too much water, and you can die. You get diabetes insipidus, and what it is, it's a disease that involves the posterior pituitary gland, and the posterior pituitary gland secretes a hormone called antidiuretic hormone, ADH, and that antidiuretic hormone keeps us from peeing ourselves out, all right?
Mm-hmm.
If for some reason you drink so much water that you deplete it, all the antidiuretic hormone is used, you know, trying to keep you from urinating out, then you become a diabetic, and diabetes insipidus takes place, and there you basically have drank yourself to death. So of water, I've only seen one case of that, not from drinking water. A young boy who had a tumor in the posterior pituitary gland, and it knocked out the cells that produce the antidiuretic hormone, and so he had ADH deficiency. ADH deficiency because of the tumor, not because he was drinking too much water. But theoretically, you can, but they say you got to drink about 5 gallons of water a day and so forth. You know, you almost have to be insane to do that.
Well, let's talk about water in the brain. I know you mentioned that, again, heat stroke is basically caused by the body overheating, getting, I think you mentioned 105 degrees or temperature. But if we could talk about water in the brain, because, you know, that's when somebody has a stroke, that's where it's going to affect the brain. And for a healthy brain, it would seem to me that a healthy person drinking enough, the required amount of water, is going to nourish the brain. Could you talk about water in the brain?
Yeah, there's running along the cells up to the brain. There's a series of tubules, microtubules, that go to feed the brain. You know, the water passes through the microtubules into the brain, and there are other tubes that actually carry the water in larger quantity to these microtubules. When you're dehydrated, and this is carried through by the blood. When you're dehydrated, you know, then your blood is much thicker, and you don't want to be in that position of being dehydrated like that.
So the nourishing of the brain when it comes to the water, I mean, with these tubes, so is that part of the reason why, in addition to just cooling the body, that water is helpful against, to ward off or fight against stroke, in addition to just cooling the body, just the nourishment of the brain?
Yeah, it's nourishing the brain. It's helping. You know, the water is used for every major chemical reaction that occurs in the body utilizes water. And so when you don't have the water, you have inadequate blood flow. The chemical reactions can't take place. The things that you need to survive just can't take place.
You know, you mentioned earlier that there were certain populations that were affected by heat stroke more than others. And was there, did they, in the research, determine why that might be?
Why some people drink more than others?
Well, I guess so. I guess that was what it would boil down to. And what were the populations? I don't want to guess. You know, which groups, as far as which groups were affected by heat stroke more than others?
The elderly, the young, the people who are sick. You know, people
on certain
medication.
But it wasn't across racial.
No. I mean, I've not looked at it from a racial perspective. I just looked at it from a more physiologic perspective, you know. So, those were the factors for these folk who really needed to be careful, because they were at increased risk. The elderly, the very young, people who are sick, people on certain medications like diuretics, steroids,
mm-hmm.
all these
you know,
are at risk.
You know, you mentioned earlier as well, and I think this is an interesting point, that there are certain, I guess, prescription drugs. Somebody might be on a prescription drug that might actually be harming them. I mean, we know the side effects of allopathic medicine, but just from the standpoint of depleting the water in their system, and the stroke could actually, or the heat stroke could actually have been brought on or contributed to by the medication that's being prescribed to the person and them not even know it.
Yeah, well, you need to observe your body and see if when you're taking medication, if these medicines increase your urine output, you know. If they do, then most definitely you're at increased risk.
You know, Doug, we talked about certain foods or certain things that deplete the water from your system. What about specific foods that increase? Like we know watermelon would be a great food for nourishing. You know, it's full of water.
All of your fruits, you know, that have, you know, cantaloupe, your apple, you know, even the berries. Most of them have a lot of water in them. So you want things that would have a lot of water from the beginning, and then you could expect that they would retain much of that water after the stroke.
You know, now I'm going to ask a question, and I don't know, I honestly don't know the answer to it, but I'm going to ask you about bread for a moment, because would bread be something that could deplete the water from your system? Because, and the reason I ask that, because if you look at bread and before it's ingested, it could be like a sponge, you know, so it seems like it would absorb water in the system. Would that be something that you would know the answer to?
No, not directly, but what happens, whatever food you eat will require it to be broken down. And so the same would be true with bread. So bread would have to be broken down to its various constituents so the body can digest it or utilize it and then get rid of the poisons that it doesn't need. Some bread have more nutrients than others. Some bread, the only good they offer is for, hopefully they do act as a sponge, because there's no nutrient properties in them at all. But if you have a bread that's of high quality, and if you're not gluten sensitive, the problem is people who will be gluten sensitive, and more people are becoming gluten sensitive because of the other things that we're eating, the sugary foods, the processed foods, and so forth, that's leading to more gluten sensitivity. And so I think that it is on the rise. But if you're not gluten sensitive, I know my wife and I, we stopped eating gluten in all forms for a while, you know. And I was so happy that I wasn't gluten sensitive, you know, because the gluten-free stuff was expensive and refined and didn't taste good.
Mm-hmm.
So that was three reasons why I want to do the right thing.
You know, I want to give everybody an opportunity again before we end the show. If you have a question or like to make a comment for Dr. Watkins, you just press 1 and I can bring you on board and you can ask your question. You know, Doc, this is a very important show, you know, just because there are people this summer that unfortunately, are going to die or suffer a heat stroke. And
yes.
Seems like it could be so easily prevented. This seems like one of those conditions that is so preventable, you know, that it just, it's sad when you think that somebody has a heat stroke when really all they had to do was stay cool. I mean, but now you do have conditions where you have people. Heat stroke doesn't necessarily mean that you're outside running basketball and you just fell out in the sun. There are going to be people who just don't have air conditions, you know, and as a result of not having cool air might suffer a heat stroke. I mean, every year around this time you hear people, you know, the alerts go out, you know, hey, make sure you check on the elderly, you know, and they have actually people that actually, you know, provide fans and, you know, air conditions to people because you can die in your house from a heat stroke.
Yes, you can.
You know?
Yes, you can.
You know, did you talk about that?
Yes, you can die in your house, you know, and especially the elderly, they you know, get a little sleepy around that heat and they're going to take a little nap and they wake up dead.
Mm.
You know,
mm.
If there's a malfunction of the their compressor or something, and they wake up dead. You know, it's real, and all this pressing heat. Our air conditioner's been out. You
mm-hmm.
know, so I know. Fortunately, my wife's a big water drinker, and I have been trying my best to pour that water out and or down me. And so that's what I've been doing.
You know, a lot of people, you mentioned something just now when you said pour it on you, mistakenly. A lot of people try to stay cool by pouring water on them, you know what I mean? But that's not going to take the place of pouring it in you. You know, you've got to drink your water. There's no substitute for water. Just like your car, it's going to run on gas. You're not going to put nothing else in the car that's going to make it run. It's going to run on gas. Don't test this thing, okay? Just listen. Don't test it, okay? Listen. Drink your water. You'll be glad.
The problem with testing it is that you're probably going to not catch it in time. And one of the symptoms of heat stroke is you become confused, become disoriented, you know, so you don't even know where you are, what you have taken, when you took it. You know, it becomes a major problem. And so we have to decide that we're not going to succumb to that problem, that we're going to do what we need to do to get well.
You know, Doc, you said the word, we have to decide. And I think that for a lot of people that are on the holistic health path, well, I know for the people that are on the holistic health path, they made that decision. They decided that I'm going to live, and I'm going to live optimally. You know, I want to live. I choose to live. And for those who have not made that choice, you're being faced with it. You're being given that option now. You're standing at the crossroads. Now, which way are you going to go? You know, could you talk about that decision, Doc? Just people making that choice to live. I've heard you say before that you've got to look in the mirror and love that person that's looking back at you. Could you talk about that?
Somebody asked me just tonight, one of my last patients, you know, how I was talking to him about exercise and you know, the importance of exercise in an hour and a half. And he said, how do you get to that? I said, look in the mirror and keep looking until you see somebody worth changing for.
Mm. I heard that.
Mm-hmm, it's right.
So everybody, if you love yourself, then love yourself enough to make the right decisions so that you can stay here, and not just stay here, but stay here healthy. Because, you know, you hear people say, oh, I had a grandma, she lived to be 105, and, you know, she drank 2 pints of Wild Irish Rose a day, smoked cigarettes, and smoked weed, you know, and she lived to be 105, you know. But they don't tell you that at 105, grandma was in a wheelchair, You know, they don't tell you that 105 grandma had a walker, you know, or was bedridden. They just say she lived to be 105. But what was the condition of her life at 105? So let's make the choices now so that as we age, as Doc said, we can age gracefully, okay? We can, you know, we can beat the odds, you know. We don't have to be in the, you know, there's some, you see pictures online of people who are 70, in their 70s, you know, who are working out, and they look good. I mean, they, you know, they have found something worth living for, and that is that person that looks back at them when they look in the mirror. So the question ultimately comes down to, do you love you to do the right thing? Do you love yourself enough to do the right thing? Doc, it's always a pleasure to have you on my show. Again, it's our show, and I just want to thank you for all of the years, for all of the patients that you've treated. You're helping to heal this planet one patient at a time. Any closing remarks for our listeners today concerning heat stroke?
Well, I just want to say that most of the problems that we face in this world are problems that were already seen and provisions have already been made. We have to be willing to do what's necessary. In terms of the heat stroke, the best way to treat it is to avoid it, you know, to stay in a cool environment as much as possible. You know, when it's real hot, if you don't have to go out, don't go out. You know, I leave for work early in the morning, and I come back later that evening. So, you know, I'm not in the direct sun. But try to have working air condition and or fans to condition the air so that the air is not a problem. Certainly hydrate yourself. Consult your doctors and see if there are medication that you're taking that can have diuretic potential. So those
Everybody
would be some
might.
Of the things that I would recommend that we should do to try to prevent. And then, of course, if you witness someone having a heat stroke, then you need to cool them off with some of the methodology that we talked about earlier.
Again, everybody, it's real. And as we know, every year we read in the newspapers about
every year
how X amount of people died, you know, of a heat stroke when the heat wave came. You know, so now you're getting this information. And like I always say, you're hearing this show on purpose. You're here for a reason. I mean, the title of the show is Summer Breeze, Avoiding Heat Stroke. Okay, you saw the title and you tuned in. So let me, and we're only talking about heat stroke, so this is what you tuned in for. So either this information is for you or it's for somebody that you know. Okay, so definitely share this link with other people. If you got it on Facebook, however you got it, share it with somebody that you know, because you just never know who needs this information, and it can really, really save their life. Not just change it, but save it. So, Doc, I just want to thank you for all of the lives that you've saved over the years, my brother. I mean, just being a medical doctor and getting on the holistic health journey and helping others to make that transition, you know, it's an awesome, awesome thing. Again, you treat people with their life coming, they come to you with their life hanging in the balance. And I'm sure there's somebody that's heard this show today and wonders, well, I need to talk to this brother. So how can people reach you, Doc, if they want to call you for a consultation or they need to get with you?
They can reach me through my office. That number is 202-388-0992. They can go on my website, which is www.twi, the word living.com. www.TWI, that stands for the Watkins Institute, living.com.
And your hours, Doc?
Yeah, I'm there Tuesday through Thursday from 2 to 5, and then Friday, I'm sorry, from 9:30 to 5, and then Friday we're there from 9 to 2.
Awesome. Doc, can you also, lastly, can you tell them about the show that you do on Mondays on WPFW? Could you tell them about your show and how they can tune into that?
Yeah, we have a wellness show that's Monday at 2 p.m. from 2 to 3. It's called To Your Health, and I'm the host, Dr. Theodore Watkins. And it's 89.3 FM is the station. If for some reason you can't tune in there and you need to go on the internet, it's www.wpfwfm.org. That's www.wpfw.org.
Everybody, my special guest today has been Dr. Ted Watkins, MD. Awesome, awesome interview, Doc. And for those who want to hear more of Dr. Watkins, again, you can check him out on his radio broadcast, To Your Health, and you can also hear him here on Juwan's for Life. Once a month, he comes on and talks about a different aspect of holistic health. We've talked about everything. So just when you go down the archives, you just find his name, and then he see a show that he's done. We've talked about heart disease. We've talked about everything. You name it. Just go down the list, and you'll see what we've discussed. And I guarantee you that you'll benefit greatly. And by all means, don't just listen. If you are in need of his services, make sure that you give him a call. Dr. Watkins, I really appreciate your time, sir.
It's
always
my pleasure.
An honor.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you so much for all of the work you do. May God continue to open doors for you, and may he continue to just use you as the tool in his hand to do the work that you do.
Well, I want to also just, commend you for the work that you're doing in the community to help spreading the word. This show, the series that you're doing there in Fort Washington, and many other things that you're doing to help get the word out that people don't have to die prematurely, that they, in fact, can change. So God bless you and keep you as you continue to labor in his vineyard.
Thank you so much, Doctor. I really appreciate your words, and I will, because when I see people like you doing what you do, I feel like I've got to help to at least, make people aware of what it is that you do. So, because our people are dying, our people are dying unnecessarily. And it's people like you and the work that you do that, we need to hear more about. I mean, we always hear about, you turn on the news, you hear about this person got shot, that person got shot, this, you hear a lot of negativity, but, you don't turn on the news and hear, Dr. Watkins just cured somebody of, a high blood pressure. Dr. Watkins just cured somebody of gout, or Dr. Watkins just cured somebody of kidney disease. That doesn't make the news yet, but we're working on it. We're working on it. God keep you and God bless you, and I'll be in touch. Thank you so much, brother.
All right. God bless. Good night.
God bless. Everybody, that was Dr. Ted Watkins, MD. Wow. Awesome, awesome brothers, doing a lot of good work, healing people, healing everything that moves since 1977, and was doing the surgery for 5 years, and then came on board with the holistic health and has been healing everything since. Again, make sure that you give him a call if you need his expertise. Again, my name is Juwanza. You're listening to Juwanza for Life, also known as Health, Wealth, and Divine. We call it Health, Wealth, and Divine because that's what we talk about. We talk about your health, we talk about your wealth, and we talk about your divinity. You want to hear shows about divinity? Oh, my God, go to the archives. We've been very, very fortunate and very, very blessed to have on this show just members of the Osiriset Society, priests and priestesses. Actually, Shechem Meshechem Ra'un Nefer Amen has been on several times. He's written an awesome book, Stress Free for Life. Another book, powerful, powerful book you got to get, Wa'eb, How to Heal and Enhance Your Brain Through Comedic Meditation. Other books, and the priestesses and priests that come on, I mean, really, really, really bring truth in a very concise way. And so to all of the Shechems and Shechems and Orwas and Orwats that have been on this show, I just want to say thank you to Ahu. And we've got fabulous guests. Brother Coy Dunstan has cured his mother of cancer in both breasts, the liver and the colon. Dr. Ruby Lason, she's a regular guest. She comes on monthly, cured herself of thyroid cancer. Next Tuesday we have Professor Joseph Geiger, who's going to be on the show talking about entrepreneurial success. He's written an awesome book called Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 102 Business Principles. If you ever thought about opening a small business or even a large business or just going into business, you need this book, okay? It's going to definitely help you. So by all means, Brother Sanu Parag comes on every third Tuesday talking about Bazi astrology, a different aspect of Bazi astrology. So there are just so many shows that you can benefit from. So by all means, take a stroll down the archives and see what you see and share that information. By the way, I had an awesome show with Queen Afua yesterday, as a matter of fact. We're talking about Sacred Woman Renaissance, okay? She's been on this path for a long time and helping so many people to heal, so many women, so many brothers to heal. We just had Lou Gossett Jr. on the show last Thursday. Go back through the archives and scroll down and see what you see. I guarantee you there's going to be something there for you. So until the next time, I want to thank you so much for your time. My name is Juwanza. Thank you so much for listening. Peace.